Okay. At first, we started this, I think it is, got serious about trying to do something in this area in Riverside. I believe that was when we first formed our certification committee, which I apologize to my members. I think I was probably as busy as everybody else last winter and didn't get a lot of time until this summer. What I'm going to quickly do is review where we were at NAPA relating to the program. The philosophy, because this is totally new to us, is that I've decided you have to walk before you can run. And looking at the numbers, comparing us to a lot of other professional organizations, whether they be organizations dealing with license or just certification type programs, we're relatively small. I went through our directory and we're roughly 235, more or less, positions that are listed as cadastral mapping type throughout the 58 counties. And I saw that 24 listed only one. So it's a major undertaking with a small group to try to get this recognized. So the best approach, I felt, is to start this by making it optional. And secondly, because we are small, is going on the philosophy of no test, because it's really not a license program, it's a certification. It's point-based, and it's self-documented. And it's broken into three categories: education, payment, professional experience, which is obviously the key, and contributions to the profession. And we've kept the levels kind of simple too. Our main bulk of it is what we're calling a cadastral analyst. That's your general category. I refer to it as basically cadastral work in the journeyman GIS, or I mean the journeyman level. And those that are more heavily involved with GIS as well as cadastral work, they have a category of the cadastral GIS analyst, which, as I indicated, has a little more experience and background with the GIS side of things, as well as just cadastral mapping. From there, you have one higher level that you can obtain called the Master Cadastral Analyst. This is the advanced category, more experience, education than the cadastral analyst or the cadastral GIS analyst. This would be your most experienced. Those making final decisions or those in supervisory type positions, which I would say is probably, if not all, everybody that's here today. Okay, what's our qualifications? Okay, for the cadastral analyst, it's a total of 150 points. You have to have at least 4 years of experience, and it doesn't necessarily have to be at the journeyman level. You'll see as I get to my point schedules that as long as you've got some experience that can be calculated into points, it's good. And for the cadastral GIS person, of this 150, 50 points should come directly related to GIS-related courses, experience, or contribution. Again, just 4 years. The master analyst would be 200 points. Now we move it up to 6 years, and at least 2 years in a decision-making or supervisory area. Minimum points. Under education, for the analyst, both categories, 25 points. The master's 30. Experience, 60, 60, 75. Contributions, 6, 6, and 8. And the remaining points can come from any category at all. So just so that they total up to at least the minimum that we're looking at. And our minimums again for the 4 years and 6 years for the two different ones. Okay, a few examples into the professional experience area. Job experience obviously is the most important factor for the qualifications. So, and these are based points per year, full year of action or work in an area. So decision making supervisory would get you like 35 points. Journeyman level is 25. If you do any classroom work or instructor, you get 15 points. And also, I have a handout that I'm going to wait till the end that will explain a little bit more about this, but experience in other areas. And that would be if you had worked in a survey office, a title office, or some other related areas where some of the experience can be converted to cadastral type work. Back on the, there's actually a factor on creating experience. You got only years, but you also, so you can have decimal or portions of years, where you also have what's called the, I forgot what the term was now, but it's a percentage of the job. Sometimes, maybe jobs in other areas, only 50% of the work is really cadastral work, so you would only get credit for 50% of the experience at a particular job. So it's a combination of time plus the job. Like teaching, you may only be teaching like, say, 10 hours a week. Well, that converts into like about 20% or 15% of the actual time. You'd see that when I put my hand out. Education, again, your points, master's degree, 25, bachelor's, 20, associate's, 10. Land surveyor license, or an engineering license will get you 15 points. Your broker, 10 points. Other professional certifications, based on what it was, there's a table that I've created for this. And courses of anything that may relate to the field. And there's quite a, that was probably one of the hardest things I had to do, is to calculate the way these courses are calculated for points. Conference, seminar attendance. Being here alone can get you some educational achievement points. And there's contributions. If you do any publications or web articles, professional association involvement, that would be like today, presentations, being involved, conference participation, conference presentation, may conduct a workshop. Awards. And we're mainly talking about awards that may be received from something other than where you really work. An award that you receive from your own county is not really recognized as a contribution to the overall profession. And there, any, there could be other things that relate to contributions as well. It's pretty open. And the points vary depending on what it is, where it is, things of that nature. Brings us up to where we are now. What I've done since last year is refine the point schedules and define it a little more on the handout that you'll receive. Now it's where we go. Now is the work comes in. Beyond the program, there's committee tasks. We need to make the program accepted by assessor departments. We'll have to present it to the Assessors Association. Are there any legal issues? Now, processing applications. We get through all that other part, and we say, okay, the program looks like it's good to go, and we create applications, and somebody starts applying for something. How are we going to process them? Should there be a fee? If so, how much? Well, obviously, there'll have to be a fee because there's going to be some, nothing else, paperwork and mailing and so forth involved. And then how are these applications going to be processed? That's a good one too. Now it comes down to what I call as the ongoing certification committee. This would be the group that would exist almost forever as long as the certification were in place and it wasn't taken over or incorporated at a higher level, which maybe ultimately it could be this a state type of program and could possibly become some type of license. I don't know, that's really down the road. Okay, this is just my proposal of the way I look at this ongoing committee. Probably I'd have like 7 members with 2-year terms, and their terms would be staggered, so we wouldn't have 7 new people in all the time. So you'd constantly be getting some new people in, and you could be reappointed or so forth. But if you commit, you'd at least be committed for 2 years. Now, I feel that people on this committee, going back to our certification, should be a master's analyst to be able to be on the committee to do the true evaluation. The committee's going to have to be responsible for all records and application processing. Now, as I indicated, that the committee should be made up of master analysts. It's like, well, wait a minute. How do you give him a master analyst if, you know, the program's not in place when he's catch-22s? Well, there is a grandfathering provision that's been created to help get that off, to get it off the ground to start with. And for grandfathering in at the cadastral analyst level, you have 200 points, and it doesn't matter. Just 200 points wherever they are, and at least 5 or more years of experience. And the same would hold for the GIS cadastral analyst, of which 85 points should come from GIS-related courses, experience, and so forth. The master analyst would be 300 points, 8 or more years, any category. And so where a lot of us are right now, we obviously have got an experience alone would qualify you for the program, and then you throw in anything else that you've done, easily can exceed these points and get the certification as a master analyst. 3 years on the grandfathering, 3 years at the master's should be decision-making supervisory level. How's the processing going to work? You apply for it. One part I haven't created yet would be the application itself. Applications would be sent in for certification, reviewed by the committee. After review, it'd either be accepted or rejected. You'd either receive your certification certificate and letter sent, or rejection letter explaining why there was a problem with it. And all of the documentation that gets sent in has to have some form of verification. So obviously, if it's like education, be a copy of a diploma or something from a class, a school, whatever, showing that you've attended. Work, in the work experience area, you briefly explain what you've been doing in a certain job, and that should be signed off by, right now, by a supervisor or somebody that could attest to what you've been doing. And this program, because our field is really changing all the time, should have the renewal certification. Because we are, it's to maintain where we are, you really need to recertify. I'm looking at, I think a 5-year cycle would be adequate. A cycle would begin from the date your certification has been awarded. Minimum points for renewal would be 50 experience and so forth, so you get a total of 70. And that wouldn't matter. The renewal would be at any level, just part of the 70 points. And here we are. Now, yep. I want to have as handouts. One's the slideshow itself, and the other is sort of an expansion on the requirements and like, I refer to it as requirements and guidelines. And in there I've expanded on particularly a lot of the categories with the point scheduling and particularly how points can be calculated. Oh, that was the term I was looking at. I forgot what I was trying to talk about with full-time. I refer to it as FTE, full-time equivalency percentages. And I've made a few examples for the different categories so you get an idea of the way I'm going about with calculating the points for the different categories and so forth. Okay, now, point is, go ahead.
First off, I'm curious as to, is there any particular reason that the cadastral analyst and the cadastral GIS analyst require the same number of points? In other words, is there no incentive or higher standing for someone who has more GIS knowledge?
No, that's something that could easily be, I mean, that could be played in so that you can move from that to that. The reason goes back to when we started. It seemed to be at the time when I was, what was it, 2 years ago, seemed to be a lot of people that were strongly with the GIS side of it and others that weren't. And but they were doing basically the same job as far as the map work, and so that's why I just created the two to give the emphasis on the one. And I, the only thing, let's see, I guess I didn't in here, there's a provision that you could go to the, from a cadastral analyst to a cadastral GIS analyst, is just by showing that some of the points, either new points or points you already have, equate to the number, and you can get it. But there's no reason, I mean, sure, it could maybe move it up so it needs another extra points to become cadastral GIS. That's fine.
And is there any reason why, or does GIS also encompass CAD?
Well, I actually was looking at more of the CAD work, because almost all the cadastral work is done by CAD that I've seen.
So okay, it's sort so of, so it's, CAD
is
kind
of,
the
sides of the fence
CAD
there.
Is kind of the baseline now.
Right,
though.
That's what it seems to be.
So, are you basing this on the GIS certification program?
Yes, it's very similar. Yes, it is. I kind of streamlined. You can say I cut it a lot less pages. And maybe by the time if we completely go through with this, it may be as many pages in the end. That's why I got the question in there. Legal issues? Yes?
I have a question. I think we got, this side of the room got the slideshow and they got the tables.
Right.
There's two. Okay, there are two different ones. So there's, I don't know which one's up here.
No, that was
that's the
board.
There should be enough of both. So wherever they got to in the back. Yeah.
You guys got that.
You got their hand up. Yeah.
What's the cost? You charge for every 5 years, or you have to pay like 200?
Well, that's that was sort of one of the, that's where we're at, to the point of actually implementing this program and moving ahead to the next level. And that would be something that would have to be looked at, is just how much should it be charged for initial certification, how much should there be charged for renewal. Right now, I have no idea. And that's something that, as we evolve on this thing, will be looked at and some number will be come up with.
I assume you have something like some sort of continuing education units, perhaps?
Yes, and they're under the, which, what did you guys have, the slideshow?
Yeah, they got the slideshow.
Okay, if there's some of the other ones that have the requirements and guidelines, there is a calculation in there for the different types of education, how you convert education to points. I mean, the easiest is degrees or something of that line. Then there's a conversion for if you have a course or something that gives you, what do they call it? Continuing education, CEUs. So there's a formula in there for converting CEUs to points, and also for just courses that maybe you were just taking a course that's accredited course at a college, university, and there's a formula for converting a credit course to points. And then last, if you just have some form of class or a workshop as an example where it's basically time-based, and there's a formula. So any of these methods of education can be converted to educational points. Yes?
You could propose something like, if this moves forward, to have like a master cadastral analyst as being the people that actually can lead these workshops to award continuing education.
Oh, sure. By all means, that's part of what I'm looking at, is down the road, the master analyst should be able to do that. Actually, part of contributions would be doing that type of thing. Yes?
What are the benefits?
Excuse me?
What are the benefits of the program?
Well, hopefully, the idea that we're, when we started a few years ago, the benefit was to try to get some recognition, in turn, filtering it into your office of making it something viable as like, hey, we get certified, you know, it means we really know something, and obviously it should mean more money. That's where we were trying, or trying to go, is to get some form that can help you show that, you know, I'm recognized by this organization, and they're the ones that really know cadastral mapping, me, i.e. us. And so that's part of one of the questions, is selling this program to your department, your county. Dazzling with words and numbers here, are we? Yes, go ahead.
What does your assessor think about this?
I haven't really talked seriously about it because I just finally got it to the point where I can begin to talk to someone other than this group, because I've now got enough background information to see where they might want to go. And that's sort of where I am at the point, and I don't want to go a lot further until we find out what type of acceptance and how committed, basically, this organization, because I don't see initially in the early years anyone other than this group handling this program.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's going to take some serious commitment for sure. Yes?
How would the appointment of the certification committee take place?
Well, it's another area right now I think is can be kicked around. I would assume that it should be, well, initially it's going to have to just be appointed by our organization to get them started. I think down the road, once you have a certification committee in place, when members decide that they don't want to, you know, they've served long enough or whatever, people could apply. And actually, I think the certification committee should look to see if the applicant for to be on the committee is qualified to be on the committee. Possibility. I mean, that's another one of those areas that's not defined yet.
Are you aware that there's a certification program available through IAAA?
Yes, I'm aware of it. Their program requires tests, and it's pretty good. But the thing is, a lot of their courses, I think you have to take, and they're limited in their locations, particularly in California. This was, it's another alternative. I mean, it's, you can do that. Well, but I like the one from the, the GSI Institute, who I modeled this after, is it's self-documenting, no test. And it's really just a recognition. It's not giving you a license or anything like an appraiser or an engineer or an LS, but it's just saying, hey, this person supposedly really knows cadastral mapping and related GIS, CAD, and so forth. That's what we're looking at. And hopefully, you put it on your wall. Hopefully you can do more than just put it on your wall. You have to put it on your resume, and it may mean something. That's the selling part of where we're up to go ahead. I mean, if we continue on. Any other comments?
George, I got a comment.
Sure.
Back, I think it was 97, we were in San Diego, and of course this came up then, and you know, that long ago, a lot of the counties were still doing, some were doing GIS, some were doing still doing manual mapping. And I think now that we're to a point where a lot of this, a lot of our profession is going to GIS, and a lot of things that we use and other agencies and everything like that, it's evolved into the GIS part of it. And you know, at some point we really need to move forward on this. And I think it's a good thing. I really think that we've got to start making a decision of where we want to go with this profession, because it's a good profession. It's really starting to become streamlined, and it's, you know, so I think we should probably should.
I appreciate it, and that's exactly where I am. And I think I'm getting a feeling we do want to continue, and it's going to take now. I don't know if those that are currently on the committee want to remain on the committee, or they'd like to withdraw, and someone else. But we will be committed with mainly answering those questions to address initially And hopefully we can make major progress by the time we meet next year in Santa Cruz. By the way, I don't have my list of, I know some of the members. Who's on the committee? Okay. Are you willing to stay on the committee and throw in some time and start working on these questions? Okay. Great. Is there anyone else that wants to be on the committee?
Could a is it just limited to supervisors, or could senior level?
Right now, we're just looking at interested parties, you know, that feel that they, you know, can contribute, and mainly got some time, because not a lot of time, but I think in the next year we'll have to devote a little more time than the last 2 years, and I apologize that for not really pushing it harder. It's a little bit of my fault, well, I guess a lot of my fault, but not throwing the whip around with my committee members. But that will happen now, because I know that several of us, who knows, a year, 2 years, maybe out there with Richard, decided we've had enough of this. Yes?
You said this proposal or this idea hasn't been presented to the Assessors Association yet?
Yeah.
In the event that it does, I was just curious what the correlation would be. I mean, if you're taking it to the assessor, get them to accept it, and in hopes that it will eventually equate to more money, which the assessors really don't control the purse strings.
Right.
No, but it helps to get them on your side, and what it'll obviously take is possibly something, possibly even in the job descriptions, recognizing that, you know, if you've got some certification, it doesn't have to be spelled out, but just getting these terms into the job description, that would mean, hey, we look for people that need or have these type of things, gotta have more money. Yes?
Yeah, I think we're battling HR for three positions. We're limited, we don't have a senior position per se, beyond the two level, and then it goes to chief. So it is in front of HR, but and our management is supportive. But I think something like this, I don't know. I mean, there's politics involved, but I can't help but think that a statewide recognition and certification of this analyst GIS, with the cadastral GIS analyst level, at least as a minimum, you say now you have some sort of recognized at least starting sure. point. To say you have to have that at least, let's say, to get to the three positions. Those are the kind of things they want to see, I think.
Yeah, and I think along those lines, when you look at the way the program is set up, it's not just working and experience, but it kind of makes you, if you really want to be certified, to do a little extra. Take a course here and there, a little contribution. Help with the website, throw out some articles, things of this nature. Mm-hmm. Actually, contribution point or in that area is the email things, initiating and responding. That's contribution. So those things, like all those things, I look at as helping the profession, exchanging ideas and so forth, whether it be email or mail or however. And the emails, I mean, I was amazed last year. It took off.
Yeah, it exploded.
Yes.
So for the education, can you actually apply the points for multiple degrees?
Yeah, if you have multiple degrees. Sure. And it has, for grandfathering, it'd be great, but after that, I mean, it wouldn't matter if you got 500 education points, you only got 40 experience, you won't make it. So you have to meet the minimums in the three categories, but yes, it's just like you can have a degree, you can be a licensed surveyor, have a broker's license, or, you know, they all add up as well. Okay, now don't run away. We will be. Wow. Before we.
Find out how many people just get one position.
Okay. Did everybody get both of them yet?
No.
No, we only got the one side. We only got, on this side of the room, we got the ones that's like this. On that side of the room, they got the your PowerPoint presentation.
Well, apparently there was, I'm beginning to think now, there might have been, at least from that movie, what we have here is a lack of communication with me and my publisher. So what I'll do is I'll just, I'll send these to Jim and he can put them out on our website and he can pull it down. I think that'll be the easiest and the fastest. I can do that Monday when I get back.
I'd rather have a PDF file anyway.
Sure, yeah. I just wanted something to work with today. So now you got a reason at the happy hour to kind of get together and say, well, what was on your earth? While I have your attention...
So you can bring work with you if you want.
Yeah, right. I agree. We do have a social get-together at 6 o'clock, and if you go out the front of the hotel, make a right, it is walking distance, or you can drive, about 2, maybe 2.5 blocks, it will be on the right, it's Gulliver's. And it's, they got it, there's an area that's reserved for us?
Yeah, it's reserved for us, there's going to be a lot of good hors
d'oeuvres. Yeah, and we'll have a lot of good hors d'oeuvres, so we're going to make sure the walking gone. There's a no-host bar. But anyway, at 6 o'clock, until the food's gone, or whatever, we'll be down there. Before we actually close today, I did have the last part of the agenda was, is there any other issues that somebody would like to bring up at this time, technical, whatever? Anybody have anything they want to kick around? Oh, there you go.
I was wondering if maybe as a topic for the next year is...
Listen, Gula.
There you go. The counties that have Megabyte, and I know not all do, which is the ownership database for the assessor's office, how there is, if there, anybody's found a way to link those to the map data, and that might be a way to go in the future. We just got Megabyte. We've only had it a year. And apparently, the little I know about it is that Megabyte, you have to pay for them to create this functionality to connect to anything. And I think, you know, we all might have the same interest of doing that, and the cost would go down. If there could just be a discussion on who's using, you know, is anybody linking to this program? And
well, is there anybody right now?
Yes.
Oh, we got some hands.
There's several ways you can do that.
Anyone else want to address that?
So to clarify, the topic would be how you link your station on tabular data.
Yes.
Okay, that's fascinating.
Any other questions? Technical, otherwise?
Just curious, I don't have any statistics on this, but it seems like the last couple of years we've been getting more and more errors in legal descriptions. Is that something? Is that an error? I mean, is that shared?
Yes, I know that. Here in Orange County, it's really escalated.
And we do a public service. We generally write a bad, what we call a bad legal letter. To whoever whoever it is in the top left corner of the deed when this is recorded, returned to. So frequently it's an owner, frequently it's a law firm or so forth.
Correct me.
I can say that.
No, go ahead.
There do seem to be more than usual. I'm wondering what we do at this point. It's an electronic system that we get in-house, our own sort of Megabyte, if you will. And so we have these various conditions or statements about the deeds that we read, and we say not a verifiable deed, and then essentially it goes back to title transfer, and sometimes they will go ahead and transfer on that even though we haven't verified. We say it's not verifiable.
Hey, well,
I'm just curious, if people put it in a hole.
Bill, Bill Price, who's my boss, under him is also our section, our what's called our identification. That's usually the first one that comes. Don't we send twice or two places?
Yeah, what we do on ours, if we don't have a good legal, we send it to the taxpayer, whoever was responsible for the deed itself, and if it's a insured document as well, we also send it to the title company for them to verify it. Doesn't necessarily mean we get it re-recorded or that any action occurs, but we do take those two steps.
So it doesn't go anywhere else in your system, though. You essentially block it there.
Not necessarily. It depends if, even if it's a bad legal, but we can identify the parcel still, okay. Then a lot of times what we do is we still mail the letters, we still process it, but it all depends on how bad the legal is.
Yeah.
If it's bad enough, we have a status that we put it in, and we wait, even if we have to wait for the statute before we process it. Could be 4 years.
Okay. And that is electronically generated.
Yes.
Our letters.
Oh, wow.
We have a Word template.
What is it? It's similar, isn't it? Like,
it's similar, but actually we have a workflow way that we process these that actually pulls from our database and populates it, and then we verify the information and they'll have. Oh, it's pretty slick.
That's nice.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Madam?
In generating the letter, that's a lot of time, a lot of the bad legals coming through right now. Why do you consider you need to give it that much mapping effort? I mean, there's no warranty code for the letters.
No, we just consider public service.
Correct. Number one, in public service. Number two, why do you want to perpetuate it?
And we do get that some are.
Well, have you ever taken a percentage on what you give back for what you write?
That's
less than 40%.
Oh,
yes, it should probably less than 10%. But
yeah, I mean, you're not giving a response. You're putting mapping effort into something that it's a title company.
Even though the percentage is low, I still think that it's a valuable service.
Yes,
you're
I agree.
Well,
all right.
The bill in the long run, I think, helps some in terms of these companies, attorneys and title companies, hopefully looking a little closer at their deeds. If they never get any information back, they definitely aren't going to pay any more attention to them.
And it also covers yourself just a bit, because then a year will pass and then someone will be on the phone. This was recorded, and then you go back and say, you were notified. The same law firm's calling in. If you had a letter on this date, as a public service, then, I'll get back to you again. So sometimes that's useful. I mean, now I've just stopped some mapping time because I'm not having to deal with that call back in their court.
And to answer your question about mapping time, 80-90% of our letters are not done by our mapping division, it's done by our ownership, our identification division, when we parse the document.
What's happening is a huge amount of recordings are now trust for refinancing in this process. I mean, all of these are bad. Are you really going to that point where you're giving them a notice of saying, hey, this is bad?
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
It doesn't. There's a lot of judgment there.
Right.
Yeah, we do it in public service also. First of all, we've got an email of all the title companies. So we email them first saying we got this problem. If they refuse to answer us or send a letter to the grantee, let them know there is a problem with the email attached to it. So they can see we already tried to contact the title company to resolve this issue.
Any other comments? Yes?
Kind of along the same lines. This year we started a new thing to try to get caught up on our entry, where we, even though the APN numbers I know on the deeds are a lot of times are wrong, we are accepting that APN number and transferring property if the ownership is correct. Automatically, we've notified all title companies that are doing that, and so far it's...
Are we? That's sort of our pecking order of what's this property, the APN is down the list. We may use that to help us locate it, but we wouldn't I think that's a little dangerous. I mean, that could be creating more problems than it could solve.
You could be transferring the whole parcel when it should have been cut.
I told that my supervisor went to a tile thing, and that's being sold as the percentage they're saying, some county up north said 10% care. And so they're saying, well, if it's only 10%, a lot of documents, they're buying off on that 10%.
In our case, like an example that would create a nightmare is dealing with like condos. Because we have what we refer to as a hold number, which is one APN, and then the actual condo billing number is a different APN that's associated with it. If they put the hold number on there, you can inadvertently transfer the entire project to somebody.
I'm with them. I don't agree with that either, but it's being sold as the way to process. If you've got a big backlog, go buy that. And you got
is that your county?
They're thinking about it, yeah.
Come on, Doug, get off the dime.
Our county.
Hammer some heads.
That's the title section.
That's what I'm saying. No, I hate it.
What's that?
Our county's doing it.
Wow.
And we just argue with title transfer all the time because when it was really a portion that was supposed to transfer, then we have to clean it up. Never saw the deed in the first place because they take all.
We run into that problem, I mean, not that often, but even with our own office, even the way the system is now, they based off of sometimes with the legal, they end up transferring the whole property when it was only a portion. Yeah. So, I mean, we got enough problems with the way it works now, and adding that. We probably end up with a stamp as large as the one that does the initial screening that corrects all the ones that mess it
up. You know what? Think about it. Is there a way that we can send a letter from our association to the assessor association? Say, we understand this is starting to be a practice, and we're very concerned about this?
Yes, I mean, we got letterhead. I guess we can send it to
anybody.
No,
we're just not
going to
stand for it.
I tell you what, Doug. When you have this letter sent, would you wait until after 12:30 tomorrow?
Yeah.
It usually goes under the name of the president. No, I mean, seriously, answer your question. No, there is no reason that we couldn't make some type of letter form to get an opinion or something or say, this is, and stating, I think the biggest thing is stating facts from our side of what type of problems it's created.
We should adopt.
Because I know that there's a lot here that nobody even knows, or I guess a lot of them don't care, as long as it gets done. And then when you come out and say, hey, what about this and this? And maybe it'll turn on a few lights. So, bottom line, yes, we can send a letter.
You want to take a vote on that, or you need a motion, or what?
Sure.
I think we should adopt a resolution.
Attorney
General.
Careful, Jim, you'll be writing it.
Just volunteer for that.
You want to make it like that? Pretty interesting. A resolution?
Can we do that? Is that in the bylaws?
I don't know. It's the president. is there a quick show of hands? Is that something that we feel we should do? Okay, sure.
No, we're not. Thank goodness.
The only thing they do is if it's insured, they will transfer it. They will still send a courtesy letter saying to the public. They don't. Well, they're not supposed to. I don't have to work it out. I'm not saying it didn't happen. But no, it only happens.
It does though, by accident.
It does happen by accident.
All reversing itself. I feel like this program got started, but it just hasn't gotten to create a problem with the appraisers yet. It will. As soon as your appraisers find this out, that this is going on, they'll be screaming.
I think sending me a letter out to the Assessors Association is a good idea. In our community, we've got title company staff hammering us to get their APNs out faster because they think they need to have the exact APPN on the deed.
To do the search.
And every so many years, they get, as we get new staff, we have to re-educate the title company.
Yeah.
I give a darn what APN they
We do that all the time because we don't release APNs until they're actually either going to roll or going to supplemental roll.
We have a problem with
exactly
that.
Exactly as you do. We put, rather than call it a whole number, it's a parent parcel or whatnot.
Same, yeah.
A portion of or whatever.
Exactly.
Their escrow closes, their documents record, and they're, you know, everybody's happy at that point.
Right.
But we sure as heck don't use that APN to transfer.
No.
I mean,
it's just a clue.
I've seen documents recorded with a number that was totally made up on the spot by Bill with recording the email.
Yeah, I think so.
It had nothing whatsoever to do with anything, any of the parts of it.
Great to see you. There and in there.
I was just going to mention, to what my comment. We, as a way to safeguard, anything that's been undergoing a split or anything like that, we've got in our megabyte system that we use also, we've got the split pinging checkbox on there.
Yeah.
That will alert them to, you know, send, kick anything back to back.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, if they just make something up, the ownership's going to be wrong. Right?
True.
They're going to find out it's an invalid number. So there's safeguards in there. And like I said, it's coming down. Eventually, I think it's headed that direction. So.
I think that's very dangerous because that guy could be owning another property and he could be putting that APN there.
It sounds like it, but then it could be the correct name. Stuff out.
That's the ABC. We do not use that at all. It's a known, strictly legal description.
Okay,
we have a problem along the lines of the APNs and the documents where cities in our county are now not issuing building permits until we issue APNs. So we have developers that will record a subdivision and that day go to the planning department and try and pull permits for all the
same thing. You just have to tell them it's not drive-through service.
But our assessor, he's got sort of pressure from developers is telling us we have to pre-assign them.
Oh my God.
I refuse to pre-assign numbers.
So the developers disappointed me. Addresses are issued. And if we don't use the same APNs, our appraisal staff screams because they can't locate all of these building permits that are coming in because they don't match our records.
Right.
And it becomes our problem to fix it.
You know what? We tell people there's always an APN on a parcel.
That's right.
That's just the old number.
But then you get one parcel that has 56 addresses assigned to it, and we get 56 parcel or building permits to come in. It doesn't match anything to have, and the same reissue of addresses later. So we have to weed through it all.
Hold on, so we get it done quicker, right?
Okay, over here first and then back there.
Our companies are pretty educated in terms of the. We already have sales generated from subdivisions that we haven't started,
yeah.
And they do put the parcel number with portion,
yeah.
Portion of this, and so we know. You know, and then we've already screened it. It's already in our in our system that it's a split or a lot line adjustment.
Our problem is the city's not issuing building permits because then the developer and they tell them it's because of the assessor's office map department.
Yeah,
give us a number, so they turn around and come to our office to complain.
We're fortunate that our assessor understands that to give out parcel numbers premature is an unsafe practice, and so he's pretty much behind us in supporting us to tell people.
That's the way we're pretty much here.
So, John, are you here?
Sal King.
If I'm not mistaken, in Napa County last year, when we had our meeting, was that right?
Yes, sir.
I believe that the first thing that happened was the Napa County Assessor welcomed us and told us that he had instituted a program of pre-assigning APNs to subdivisions and within months abandoned that program. It's just impossible to manage.
Oh, yeah.
I know our county looked at it a little, we had thought about it a little, but we're luckily, it just so happened that a couple personal tracks that went through, we had to renumber them afterwards.
Yeah.
And so the program kind of dropped real quickly.
Yeah, I think that's dangerous.
What difference does it make if we pre-assign a parcel number, even though it may not be right once we do the work? I mean, who cares, you know? It doesn't matter.
Linked to the right parcel.
Yeah, it's not,
your appraisal will be going on the wrong.
They get confused and then they get frustrated. Mm-hmm. It's not that they can't figure it out, but it's the whole process of them doing it and rebugging us and figuring out where it goes.
Yeah,
it just takes longer. I wouldn't recommend that it takes longer, but I guess it's possible to figure it out in the end. But it's a whole lot of extra steps.
You probably have a city complaint saying you gave me this number, now you say it's different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I just see problems down the road. You're helping me work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are best practices, and then there's that.
So the county, just before the maps are recorded, it comes to us, and we assign the parcel numbers and submit it to GIS only. So we have this early entry program where we do reassign the numbers. And so far, we haven't had any errors. And we've been doing it for more than 2 years now. Just only for the county, but not for the city.
Right.
You don't run into problems with CRA cuts and those situations where you've got to cut in combine before you come out?
We go around the boundary line. That means we're not cutting the actual parcel. We do follow the TRA, but we actually going along. Like the way the families are going for their lots. We're not splitting lots for the TRA.
Do you split lots when you get involved with some TRAs?
Pardon me?
Do you split lots that do involve multiple TRAs?
Well, only in the new subdivisions, we don't split the lots. We go around the boundaries.
Right up in your neighborhood up there.
There is a provision.
Yeah.
Allows us to do somewhat if the values are there.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
SB 11.
Yeah, it's kind of a call.
It's like 5,000, like 6 square inches.
Yeah. Oh, any more? Oh, there.
Yes. We're actually in a similar situation as San Joaquin in Calaveras County. Right now, it so happens that the building department director assigns the addresses. He's doing that from a tentative map.
Did it change?
So the addresses are all given out. When the building permits come through and they were issued, they put the parent parcel number, so we know it's only a portion of that. I believe with that lot number, he's got the address on there based on the lot that he's already seen from the map. That will stay as the parent parcel number until we actually split the subdivision. They're collected once we assign new APNs, they're all going through the separate jackets. So far it seems to be working just fine, but it's taken a long time to get the building department's cooperation in going ahead and issuing those permits, so it doesn't care if they're working on that. He's assigned the address. I don't know.
Like in our county, we receive our side divisions from the part of the county council. That's the only source.
Okay. Looks like I believe that's pretty much wrap it up for the day. And so we will adjourn until tomorrow morning at 8:30. Our game will be continental breakfast at 7:30 and 8:30. And hope to see you all down at Culver's at 6.